Alrighty, we are back, and our second guest today is Reverend Frederick Shaw, S-H-A-W, and he is with the CCHR International. He is the Director of Public Affairs. The website of interest is CCHRINT. I've had the pleasure of speaking with this wonderful gentleman before, and I'm very grateful to have him back. Reverend, thank you so much. How are you doing?
Thank you. I'm doing fine. Thank you for asking, and thank you for having me back on your show again.
It is just amazing the kinds of things that are going on against children, which is terrible. It's terrible what they're doing to children, especially children who are unfortunately in what we would consider the system, where they might be foster children or in some sort of a care situation, foster care situation. And you have worked with these children for a long time. You've been at this for a very long time. Your interest has been with these children for a very, very long time. Tell us a little bit about what your current efforts are doing, what you're doing now. Go ahead.
I'm representing the Citizens Commission on Human Rights, and we have a Fight for Kids campaign. If I could just give you a little background, when
yes.
I was a young man, I grew up in the inner city of Compton, and I wasn't a gang member or anything, but I was affiliated with all types of gangs. And one day, I almost threw my whole career and life away. And we were standing at the door of a house, and we were getting ready to do we had actually entered the house, was doing like a home invasion because one of my friends had been threatened by a guy that was in that house, and we were going to take care of it. And for some reason, I could not find it within me to give the order to execute these people. And 2 weeks later, my mother and father took me to dinner, and they were telling me how proud they were of me, and I sat there and was shaking because I didn't have the that a lot of the young people in my community had, because I had good parents. We were not poor. It was an activist family, a family of achievers. We have doctors, lawyers, all these type of people in our family, ministers, and I almost threw it all away in a second. And at that moment, even though I was 19 or right in that age group, I realized that if I was throwing my life away at that age with all of these advantages, even though I grew up in the inner city, then what about the children that didn't have a strong father in a home and a loving mother in the home? What about the families that didn't have money? What about those people? And so at that moment, at that age, I made a decision that I wanted to help kids. And so it allowed me to get on that path, to become a minister, to do a whole lot of different things, because I just realized that these kids didn't have the situation I had, and even I almost threw my life away. So that's what put me on the trail of helping children, caring about children, and trying to give them all the support that they need in order to be successful in life. So I stand with CCHR and work with them in trying to protect children.
And you could have done something very opposite, but something held you back. And oh my gosh, amazing! And you have engaged in good beneficial activities since that point. And what if you hadn't done? What if you had caved in to peer pressure at that time and gone into that house? Oh my gosh, how different your life would have been. But now tell us what you're doing as far as children. I know in 2005, that you were a recipient of Men Who Care Award along with Jamie Foxx, and you received this award because you because of your assistance and your participation with the NAACP leadership and your persistence to eliminate the drugging of children. And the drugging of children, well, the drugging of anybody is horrid. I don't believe in psych drugs. But children, oh my gosh, why is it that so many parents decide because of a teacher or because of somebody that says, oh, this child needs Ritalin, let's put them on Ritalin, which is similar to putting them on cocaine or some other drug. And once you're on this type of a drug, it's very difficult to get off of it. A lot of times they go on to do other drugs, correct?
That's correct. And what happens is we have been taught to believe authority. You know, we believe our tax accountant, our lawyer, you know, we believe our doctors. And so we believe mental health. The parents are not being educated on the side effects of these drugs, which side effects is a term that we use in our society today, but it's actually the effects of the drug. And, you know, there's enough cases where kids have become suicidal and all of those types of things to say it's actually an effect of the drug. And but our parents, you know, they believe the doctors. And in this time where we have to move fast and react quick, it's a quick fix situation for these parents. If a kid is unruly, they don't want to have to take off work. They don't want to have to spend the time. They don't want to have to change their lives around. So they basically listen to these doctors that say, oh, yeah, he's suffering from this or that. It gives everybody an excuse. The parent can say, oh, he can't do better because he has this disease. Teachers don't have to teach him because he has this disease. I mean, nobody has to perform for this kid and make this kid achieve what he should in life because we got this answer that allows us to, you know, basically go along with the flow, and we don't benefit the child that way.
Right. And as you say, the side effects aren't really – side effects makes it sound like, well, these are unavoidable, but every single drug, whether you're talking about Tylenol, which is, you know, you can buy it without a prescription, whatever you're talking about has a side effect. It's going to affect you in some way. And a lot of times, some of those side effects include death. If you watch TV, which I haven't been doing lately, I haven't turned it on lately, when they tell you about a particular drug, and this country, and I believe New Zealand is the only two countries in the world that allow direct to consumer marketing. In other words, the drug companies can now advertise on TV. They may have taken this situation out of New Zealand, but in America, if you're listening to TV, if you will just look at what it says at the bottom of the screen or look what it says, listen to what those side effects are. Don't look at the picture of them driving by in their Mercedes with their hair flowing behind them. Don't look at the picture. Listen to what the side effects are. And you'd never want to take a drug. But people are not listening. They look at this promotion, then they run to the doctor and say, oh, could you give me this or give me that? And of course, doctors are rewarded, when they are prescribing these things because the, drug salesperson, and I have had, guests on the program who have talked about, who were actually, drug sales representatives, they they reward the doctors for prescribing the medications that they prescribe. So it's a pretty awful business to be involved with. But anyway, so I really appreciate what you are doing and what the organization that you represent are doing, CCHRINT.org. I appreciate what they're doing. That stands for Citizens Commission on Human Rights International. And so not only do we have to deal with drugs, there's also the electric shock therapy. So tell us a little bit about that and why that's so terrible. Go ahead.
Well, first of all, I want to address something you was mentioning about how New Zealand and the United States are basically the two countries that advertise directly to the public with these type of psychotropic drugs. And just for your audience to understand, we should not be telling our doctor what we want. I mean, that's the way they do on the streets. You go up to the drug dealer and you say, I want this, I want that, and they give it to you. Our doctors should be basing what we get on our allergies, blood tests, scans, all of these type of things that should be done before they prescribe a drug to us. They need to review our medical records. That's when you're doing your work properly as a medical doctor or in the medical field. So for us to go up and say, Doc, I can't get along with my parents. I have bad grades. I don't focus properly. I need Ritalin. That's not the way this game is supposed to go. And then they give them the drug, and then the kid crushes it up, snorts it, sells it to his classmate, because the kids already know what it is. It's similar to cocaine. So, you know, just to wrap that up, our doctors need to be doctors. They can't be drug pushers. And I'm not accusing them of that. I'm just saying that it can't be that way for the safety of the public. And if they were doing it that way, they would not be prescribing these kids drugs that cause the harm that it does, because if we know it, they know it. So they should not pretend like, oh, I'm going to give him Prozac for this, and I'm going to give him, you know, this particular drug. And I just want to tell one little story, then I get into the ECT. I gave a speech once at one of the at Compton Community College, and I told them that they should make sure that each kid get a medical examination before they're given a psychiatric drug. I mean, a full medical examination. A lady came out of the audience and she told me the story of a 2-year-old girl who would howl in the night like an animal, pull at her hair, scratch her face, yank her ears. When you picked her up, she cried and punched and fought. She moaned during the night. And I said, well, take her to a medical doctor, because a psychiatrist had put this 2-year-old on Prozac.
Oh, my gosh.
So the lady took the child to the doctor, and what was wrong is the child had a severe ear infection and head lice.
Oh,
so
my gosh.
Here they were giving her Prozac, denying her actual treatment that could have made her better. And so these are the things that I'm talking about when you can just prescribe. You delay treatment that can benefit the person when you just give somebody a psychotropic drug. Because it is very hard to know the difference between depression and anemia. It is hard to know if somebody's babbling incoherently or if they have a brain tumor. The thyroid can cause certain things that mirror mental illness. We remember the old movies where, especially the Western, when the guy would be in the desert and he would get dehydrated and start having hallucinations. Let's make sure that there's no underlying cause before we even consider the possibility of a mental illness. So I just wanted to wrap that up so that the audience could get a viewpoint of where CCHR stands on this. We are not against mental health. We are against what we consider psychiatric abuse, which is the drugging of children, the electroshocking of people, that is abuse to us. So with that, I'll go into the electroshock a little bit, unless you want to ask a question on something I've just said.
I'll talk about this electroshock therapy, and then we might open the phone lines too for questions. But yeah, talk about electric shock, which is so horrible to me. Anybody that has ever inadvertently shocked themselves, why would anybody even consider doing that to a child's brain or to anybody's brain? It is beyond me. So,
What it does is it make me look at what is the intention of the individual who would do such a thing. Your electric socket has about 120 volts in it. Most of us know, and us little boys that stuck forks in there and got the shock of our life, know that that's a powerful dose. But in a electroconvulsive therapy, it can go up to 460 volts. So how can you put that much electricity through the brain of a child or adult and expect them to be normal? Now, let me tell you how this works. They start the electroshock, and they turn it up till the person has a grand mal seizure. When the person has that seizure, then, you know, your process is pretty much done. However, grand mal seizures can cause brain damage, and a lot of times do. Experts have said that cells are killed. As much as 1 million cells can be killed through electroshock therapy. So why would you do that to a human being when you know you're causing damage, and the industry itself says it's a good type of brain damage? How can you have a good type of brain damage? Damage is damage.
Exactly. Oh, my gosh. Okay, we will be right back momentarily. All righty, we are back with our guest, Reverend Fred Shaw, and the website of interest is cchrint.org, which stands for Citizens Commission on Human Rights International, and I have posted that in our chat room, and I invite you to visit. Okay, let's pick up where we left off. It's just horrific what is going on. Go ahead.
Yeah, so the thing is that electroshock therapy should be banned altogether. And let me show you. One of the experts said that 1 million cells, brain cells in an adult is destroyed with ECT. So let's say that 1 million cells are destroyed in the brain of a child that is 2 years old. Not only did you kill those 1 million cells, but you killed all the cells that those cells would have created as the child developed through life. So you're basically stunning the growth, and it seems like this industry has the purpose of making mental patients for life. And so this is why we stand in the gap. We want healthy mental health. But this system today is not that. This is not a system of mental health. It's a system of mental control. And as long as you're controlled, be it brain damaged or not, then psychiatry looks at it as a success.
Wow. And certainly, they want to have as many lifelong patients as they possibly can have. And so starting children out on Ritalin or shock therapy, they're going to have patients for life. And Oh, that's such a sad situation.
And it's especially sad because this is an organization or a group that people trust. They go to them for their mental health, and then they're double-crossed and given drugs that can cause suicide and homicide, electric shock that destroys the brain, cause lung. Even if you go on the internet, they say that you get a mild dose of electroshock and there's short-term memory loss. But I've talked to people who after 4 years still didn't have their memory back from electroshock therapy. So I'm wondering about any organization that does not have the ability to see the damage that they're doing to their patients.
So are we talking about a psychiatrist in general? Now, there are two kinds of psychiatrists. There's the kinds that pretty much just are there to drug people. You go in, you spend 10 minutes. Okay, we'll be right back. We're at the top of the hour. We'll pick this up on the other side. Be right back.
Listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
All right, we are back, and our guest this hour. Hour and a half is Reverend Fred Shaw, S-H-A-W. And we were talking about the difference between a psychiatrist and a psychologist. And when the whole system has been set up where if you go in to talk to a psychologist, you're usually there for an hour. You're talking things through. You're talking about your problems. And that's good. That is a good thing. However, the system is set, the insurance industry, which really has a lot of impact on the medical field. The insurance industry will not pay for a psychologist. However, they will pay if you're a psychiatrist and you go in, and what a psychiatrist does is they just write prescriptions. Their job is to write prescriptions, and the insurance companies will pay their fees. And so right away, there's a big difference. There's also a big difference. You were mentioning earlier that you should get a medical exam to figure out, okay, what is wrong? What are some of the underlying circumstances of your situation? They do blood tests. They do all these tests on you, and they make recommendations based more holistically, and are able to say, okay, you need, for instance, you might need a thyroid medication, or you might need some of their medication, but it's based on blood tests. It's based on science. And so there's a really a big difference in the function of each doctor. And it's unfortunate that the insurance industry will pay for some but will not pay for others. And it's unfortunate that that seems to be in favor of psychiatrists who just dole out this medication. Would you agree or no?
No, I would agree with that. Psychologists, yeah, for the most part, they talk to people and they try to, the best they can, run you through what's going on in your life, and they try to help you come up with solutions. But the psychiatric field is totally different, and I can give you an example.
Okay.
I left a job where they were mistreating a lot of the managers, and they were making the managers do unethical things, pitting them against each other. It was really a horrific environment. So I went off the job on stress. But when you go off on stress, you have to go through mental health. You got to see a psychiatrist. This is what literally happened. I go in, and the psychiatrist asked me real nicely, what's going on? I explained it to him for about 3 to 4 minutes, told him, gave him examples, scenarios, the whole thing. He said, well, I can prescribe you, and it was two different drugs. And I said, hold on, I'm the victim here. Why are you prescribing me a drug? You need to be giving it to the people that's causing all of this pain and suffering on the employee. He said to me, he looked me dead in the eye and said, I'm a psychiatrist. I write prescriptions. I said, well, I want something that first starts me off with coping skills and that type of thing. But then he refers me to like a therapist, a group therapist type lady, social worker or something like that. And then they put me in classes, and we went from there. But after 3 to 4 minutes, he had two different drugs he was going to prescribe me. Now, my problem with all of this is that they are giving people drugs for the appropriate response for the situation that they're in. If a person's parent dies or child dies or anyone, the appropriate reaction is sadness, mourning, that type of thing. If I take a little longer to get through it than you do, what makes me mentally ill when the emotional response would be sadness? I would say that you should give it to me if I'm jumping for joy and throwing parties or something and somebody that dear to me has passed, but to be sad and then call it depression and give me drugs, that's not the way this life is supposed to be. We work through these things. I've lost both my parents. I've lost a sister. You work through it. Yeah, you go through the emotional roller coaster, but that's normal. So why are we drugging people for normal behavior?
Right. How true. And that is what the system, allopathic medicine is set up to do. Now there are things, people used to sit on the front porch and talk to their neighbors. And
right.
that was therapeutic and was wonderful. And people were able to talk through their issues, their problems. But now, life has changed. It's changed drastically. Now there are, under certain circumstances, situations where people do need a prescription, but it certainly should not be at the drop of a hat. It should be studied. It should be figured out. You know, is there an alternative? Are there other things that can be done? And not immediately go for the prescription, and particularly if the prescription has those really negative side effects. And even when you are in a doctor's office and you say, well, wait a minute, this has some really bad side effects, the doctor is likely to say, well, so does Tylenol. And And so, as you said before, we tend to obey. We tend to obey or be obedient to people that we deem have authority. And gosh, it's not a good position to be in, because you're liable to agree to do something that has some horrific consequences.
And not being a medical doctor, I would dare not say what situations a person should or shouldn't be medicated. I can just say this. If the cure is worse than the disease, then maybe we should not do it. You know, since they have labeled all addiction mental illness, including smoking cigarettes, if you give me Chantix to cure my smoking addiction, and Chantix can cause me to blow my brains out today so I don't die 30 years from now from cancer, maybe I should not take that drug. Maybe I should take my chances of living 30 years. And if you listen to that, go ahead.
That is number one for homicide and suicide ideation. That's number one on the chart is Chantix. And when they advertise that, I've seen some advertisements on that, they never mentioned that it's number one. You feel like committing suicide or killing somebody if you're on that drug. What a horrible thing to go ahead.
And let me say this. That is not by accident. That is intentional to push that drug and other drugs on the public like that. They even go so far as to say you can start off slow from smoking. It's let the drug hook you in before we want to clamp down and deal with your smoking. If they want to do smoking at all, and I'm going to just say this. I'm not speaking for CCHR at this second. I'm going to just say this. We have all of this promotion about vaping and cigarettes, and I'm not a vapor. I'm not a cigarette smoker. My wife even quit smoking when we got together and so forth. So I'm not a fan of smoking. But why are we legalizing marijuana while we're doing all of this TV promotion about how bad cigarette smoking and vaping is? So the hypocrisy that's going on with this whole thing is horrible. Plus, I'm a little nervous about that new marijuana also. But I'm not, you know, we don't deal with that necessarily in CCHR. So I just wanted to make that clear.
I have some thoughts about that also. They're legalizing it all over the country. And when the government legalizes something, that means they control it. That means that they can make money off of it. That means that they can do whatever they want with it. And if it was bad 20 years ago, why is it good now?
I would tend to think it's worse now because I've smelled this marijuana, and it does not smell like the marijuana of the past. And people seem to be getting more addicted to it and so forth, but I'm not an expert in that area. But I just know if I look at it, if vaping is bad, if cigarette smoking is bad, if you're looking at secondhand smoke, you're looking at damage to the lungs, you're looking at all that, what makes marijuana better?
Exactly.
And that's the only question I'm asking. What makes it better?
Right. And whether you're taking it, smoking it or eating it or however they're distributing it, I just think it's a really bad, bad idea. I think that
we've told everyone just say no. We told all these generations of kids don't use drugs, and now you can use it. Oh, you can do it. And I just think that the message needs to be consistent. And all of these drugs need to have stronger guidelines, and the FDA needs to do its job and not knuckle under to the field of mental health or the pharmaceutical company. They have a job to do, and they should not be allowed to sit with companies that make these drugs and then make decisions about these drugs.
Right. The FDA does not test anything. The companies that produce the pharmaceuticals do all the testing, then they go to the FDA, they get the FDA money, and then the FDA approves the drug. And there's a huge revolving door between the FDA and former heads of within the drug industry. And so it's just, and it all is going to be harmful, in my opinion, to individuals. I think that that we really need to decide what we're going to put in our bodies if we are capable of doing that. And it's not to say that everybody is going to be capable of making those decisions. If a person has Alzheimer's or some other kind of a thing going on, then obviously that they're not able to make those kinds of decisions. Responsible people who are charged with helping Alzheimer's patients should be responsible enough to make those decisions.
Absolutely, and I agree with you on that. And we just got to make sure, and I think the Citizens Commission on Human Rights is basically trying to make the ethical standards that are needed into these fields so that we can benefit from it. But if they're allowed to make bad drugs, to do electroshock therapy, things like that to destroy people, and they can make big money on it, then what's the incentive to change it? What would happen if they said in 5 years, your drug must show that it is improving the quality of life of people? I bet you would see a whole different pharmaceutical industry. It's like, but as long as you can get rewarded for not producing, for not making people well, for making people actually more sick, I went in because mama died and I was a little depressed. They gave me a pill, and then I started hearing voices. They gave me a pill. Then I started feeling suicidal. They gave me a pill. I mean, they make money all the way down the line, and we have
right.
to start looking at them.
Right. But as you said, we often look at authority figures and we make the wrong decision based on the fact that we all grew up to respect authority. So it's kind of a terrible situation that we find ourselves in. And this is not to say that people should not have any medication at all. but they should be able to, for instance, well, have a medical doctor who is thinking holistically of the entire body, who will perform the test and do what is necessary and not have some guy that's going to spend 10 minutes with you and give you a pill.
Well, and the thing is they have to open up the industry. And allow companies that are not connected to these big pharmaceuticals and stuff be able to present ideas to handle it in the body. I've had neuropathy from diabetes for a long time. I was in so much pain. I understand what people go through. I do an alternative treatment, and they knocked out 95% of all of my pain. Well, how come the insurance companies won't cover that? So we have to look at this, that this seems to be this plot connected in all of this, because the insurance companies now are not funding drug rehabilitation programs that do not use medication. So that's a subtle way legislatively to knock out the competition who could bring advancements in the different fields of mental health, in the medical profession, and so forth. So we have to, as a society, have to start asking questions and have to start standing on our own two feet, join organizations like the Citizens Commission on Human Rights, join other organizations that are actually trying to produce something and try to make things better. And we just can't be, like Jesus said, like sheep.
Right.
So we have to be able to understand that, hey, wait a minute, the responsibility of my health is not with that doctor. That doctor is supposed to tell me what is wrong with me, and either the medication proves out when I look at the effects of it, or I can go to a holistic person, and maybe first, what one pill does over here, garlic does over there. Maybe, you know, we need to look at this from a whole different point of view. There's vitamins like vitamin E and different ones that help you mentally. How come they're never prescribing that? So it's like we have to take control and be responsible for our own health.
Right. And getting back to what we're talking about, marijuana, they also, you mentioned, why don't they say vitamin E, or why don't they say garlic, or why don't they prescribe this? You said you had neuropathy, which is a terrible thing to have, but they cannot make any money off of something like melatonin. They can't make any money off of a clove of garlic. They can't make any money off of vitamins, because they don't own the patents. The only way that the government can make money off of something is if they change the substance sufficiently in order to have a patent on it, which is what I think that they've done with medical marijuana. They now produce a marijuana that they can charge more money for because they've changed it, and some of the substance. We'll be right back momentarily. Be right back.
It starts with you and me. It starts with you and me. We all can be heroes if we take the lead.
All right, we are back. And our guest is Reverend Fred Shaw. And the website of interest is cchrint.org, Citizens Commission on Human Rights International. And we were talking about drugs and talking about all the side effects. Now, between 1975 and 1999, the FDA approved 548 new drugs between 1975
wow.
and 1999. Is that unbelievable?
That's and it makes you wonder why. And we know that it's because a lot of the people who are on the FDA work for pharmaceutical companies, and we all know you don't bite the hand that feeds you. And some of them make more money consulting for these companies than they do on their regular jobs. So they're doing what they get paid to do.
Exactly. And doctors are also, they need to comply with what is called the standard of care. Otherwise, insurance companies will not pay him or her for his services, and the board may even revoke their license. So even if a drug is dangerous and ineffective, a doctor is obligated to prescribe it once the FDA has given their approval. And
right.
I mean, that's really just looking at cancer from 1970 to 1990. Cancer was a very profitable disease, about $1 billion worth of medications, chemo drug sales, other therapies. Allopathic medicine didn't actually cure anybody. They just treated you. And they never use the word cure. They always say treat.
Right. I think it's against the law to even say that you can cure anything.
Right.
And that's what lobbyists do. And unfortunately, and that's what I was meaning when I was talking about CCHR wanting to help with the ethics back in, the morals back in, because if you can't electroshock children if you are morally sound. I know that because when I had my group home, I ran 24-hour residential care facilities for kids that were on probation. These were all kids that had gotten in trouble and so forth. And we, as our group, refused to give these kids psychiatric drugs. And we forfeited $64,000 a month that we could have got if we would have drugged those kids. But spiritually, with my faith and so forth, I could not do that. And we have lost in our society the moral compass that we need to have the integrity to do the right thing. So we're selling out, and God is becoming money now. That's who the real God is right now in our society. Even though I'm a minister and I have faith and there's a lot of different religions, so right now they are replacing prayer with a pill. And if you don't, if you can't pray, if you can't believe in God, if you can't have a spiritual connection that you're working on to get to a higher state of mind and so forth, then the medication and stuff take over and you become a hopeless people. And I mean, not just me speaking from a spiritual standpoint. So we have to put the morals back in society, the ethical behavior back in society so that we can trust our doctors. I went to the doctor for the pain from neuropathy. I told him all I wanted was something for pain. I didn't want an antipsychotic. I didn't want anti-seizure. I just wanted something for pain. The doctor, she folded her arms, looked at me like, who are you to tell me what you want? And then she said, well, what I'm going to give you is none of those. It's specifically for neuropathy. So I go back to CCHR, look it up in our database, and it's a psychiatric drug. So now I can't even trust my doctor. So when they tell me, oh, the coronavirus is going to kill this many people, do I believe them or not? It's because I can't trust them. You know, I know they're not putting ships out there for nothing. I know they're not converting convention centers for nothing. They intend for somebody to fill them up. But at the same time, I should be able to take what my doctor tells me and know what he's saying is true or to the best of his knowledge is true and go from there. And we can't seem to do that anymore.
How true. That is really true. It is very interesting too, that with this COVID-19, it has some, it's a virus and you can't treat it with, a virus is something that you should never give an antibiotic for. Viruses,
right.
You know, if you have a bacterial infection, an antibiotic is good. But a virus, just chicken soup and something else, will be the thing that will rest in chicken soup. Okay, we will be right back and we will open the phone lines if you'd like to ask questions. Be right back.
It starts with you and me. We all can be heroes if we take the lead.
All righty, we are back. And our guest is Reverend Brett Shaw. And some people claim that gun owners, we're talking about gun owners, and some people claim that guns kill so many people, and there are 700,000 allopathic physicians practicing in America, and there are about 120,000 accidental death-related deaths annually, which accounts for 0.17% of deaths per doctor. In comparison, there are 80 million gun owners in America. Annually, there are 1,500 accidental gun-related deaths. So it is 9,000 times more likely that a person will be killed by a doctor than by a gun owner. So I know that's kind of irrelevant, go ahead.
Well, the one thing that we have done, I'm an ex-law enforcement officer, so I did 13 years with the Los Angeles County Sheriff Department, and I'm going to say this tongue-in-cheek, but I've never seen a gun kill anybody. I've seen people with guns kill people.
Exactly.
And so the thing is that this idea, and I know this is a little off topic, but this idea of banning guns and so forth, if we did ban guns, all that would happen is that a black market would arise dealing those same guns. And the good people wouldn't have guns, and the crooks would. And so people have the right to protect themselves. And I'm not going to get deep into this, but you know, they need to check and see how many of the people who are doing these homicides are on these psychotropic drugs.
Exactly.
Because a lot of these mass killings and stuff, when you trace them back, people have been on those drugs.
Exactly.
I'm not saying everyone, but there's a report, psychiatric drugs create violence and suicide, and there's some very indicting information in that booklet. So it's like we need our politicians to not just listen to what the pharmaceuticals or mental health is saying. We need in each one of those offices somebody that research to determine if these statements that are being told to our legislators and so forth is even true. I mean, there's no clinical trials to show that these electric shock devices are any good or not. In fact, I believe that if you really looked into it, you find that they're far more dangerous than they have any benefit. I mean,
my problem is
that you're not only electroshocking children from 0 to 5 years of age, but pregnant women causing miscarriages. Now, if we can't do electroshock on terrorists and prisoners of war, but we're doing it on children and pregnant women. That doesn't make sense to me. So this whole field has to be reevaluated. In this country right now, we have 6.7 million children on psychotropic drugs. What? It couldn't be that many kids that are mentally ill like that. But let me tell you another thing. Let's say 6.7 million children on these psychotropic drugs. Let's say that 1% of them will do a homicide or suicide or school shooting. I mean, now we've dropped, what, to 60-some thousand? Okay, that's just 1%. But if you only took 1% of that, you still have over 600-some kids at any one moment that could do a mass shooting or a school shooting. And the drugs have suicidal warning labels. So if it has a suicidal warning label, then it's homicidal. Because a suicide is just a homicide done to yourself.
Right.
So if I would kill myself, I would kill somebody else.
Exactly.
I mean, that's the way I'm looking at it.
Wow. And if you look at all the mass shootings and really study them and research them, you will find those kinds of basic facts. And it takes time to research each shooting. You can't just say 10 hours after it happens, oh, it was this or that. You really have to study something. But, anyway, let's open the phone lines. The telephone number is 800, what is it? 800, I just had a brain freeze. 9443. What is the phone number? Gosh, I can't believe I just had a brain freeze. Anyway, It's 800. I don't know. 313-9443. Sorry. 9443. 1-800. See, it just goes to show I've had a long day or something. Or I'm losing it totally. 1-800-313-9443. Okay. Let's open the phone lines and to take some phone calls. If you have questions or comments for Reverend Fred. Yes, no? 1-800-313-9443. So anyway, there are a lot of things that certainly do need to be answered and addressed. And we also need to know exactly who sets the standards for what they call the standard of care. Who decides how people are going, what people are going to receive for whatever a physical or mental malady that they happen to have? Okay, you have four entities. You have the insurance companies, you have the hospitals, you have the American Medical Association, which is a labor union, and then you have Big Pharma. Those are the four entities that are making decisions about your entire life. And they're all very questionable, obviously. The American Medical Association, which was established in 1843, but would you believe that long ago, in Chicago, and it was a labor union to protect a certain kind of medication that was going to take the place of more natural therapies that had been in use for thousands of years. So you have that, and then you have Big Pharma, and we know where their interests are is certainly in making money. You have the hospitals, which, of course, are interested in making money. And I had an email from a lady just this week about something that has been the subject of this program many times, and that is on organ transplantation. The hospitals, when they transplant an organ from a dead, quote, dead person, the hospital receives $11.2 million. $11.2 million. And the donor's family doesn't get anything. And it must be remembered that an organ transplanted from an individual has to be transplanted from somebody who is alive. Because within just minutes after a person is dead, their heart is no longer viable. Nothing's viable except your skin, maybe some things that aren't essential to life. Not that your skin isn't essential, but your primary organs are the essential things that people are looking for. And the hospital makes $11.2 million per donor. So if you're in a traumatic accident and you are transported to a trauma center, you're likely to be harvested. And that's a horrible thing to talk about. But somebody did contact me this week, and I just felt really, really bad for her. And of course, very badly for the people who I've talked about in the past, whose children have been harvested, which is terrible, terrible. So when you look at the people who are making the money, it seems that all of them are to benefit big money. They don't necessarily benefit the patient. They are all designed and set up to benefit corporations, and more corporations. So it's a pretty sad state of affairs that that the medical industry finds itself in or was put in. We didn't just wake up one day and have everything be awful. So anyway, if you want to weigh in, feel free to call 800-313-9443. Reverend Fred.
Yes. You know, I was just listening to what you were saying, and, you know, it just reaffirms that all this is about money. You know, there's no other reason that we would drug 450,000 kids from 2 to 5 years of age. Enough babies are being drugged from 0 to 1 that, you know, you could fill up the sports arena and the Los Angeles Forum, all these places together. And it's only for money. And somebody has an evil purpose behind that. And, it just disturbs me to hear everywhere we turn, we're running into this sacrifice the people for the money. And that's what we're talking about. Otherwise, you wouldn't do that to babies and young children. I mean, that's who we're supposed to protect even more than ourselves. And that is who's the victim to these people. So, you know, I just want to thank your show for having the courage to bring this topic on, and thank you, Deanna, for having me back to express what's going on in these industries, because, you know, it's not a popular stance, because the advertisement, the amount of money that's going in to make you think that everything is all right and this is the way it's supposed to go, they're even starting to advertise if you get the following permanent ticks or where your mouth starts involuntarily moving and clicking and so forth, this is normal when you take that drug. Well, okay, but who says I want that condition? You know, but they can advertise, and they need to stop the advertising. They should be able to diagnose you based on what is going on, and I'm talking about from the medical field. I'm not even talking about mental health, because that is such a sham. They vote to determine what goes into the diagnostic statistical manual. It is not done on clinical trials. There's no proof to any of these disorders. That's why you got things like mathematical disorder and caffeine disorder. They take normal behavior and then turn it in to a mental disorder. And at CCHR, we say childhood is not a mental disorder. You know, two-year-olds have been called the terrible twos forever. But now, from 2 to 5, 447,000 children are being put on these drugs? That's ridiculous.
Oh, my gosh. It is. And the total number of children who are on these drugs, and we're talking infants. How do you say that an infant how could any doctor with any brains prescribe Prozac for a child that hasn't even arrived at the age of 1 year old? How can that happen? But that happens. There are doctors that do that.
Mm-hmm.
Just amazing.
And see, that goes against the Hippocratic Oath that of doing no harm. They're not supposed to harm people. They're not even supposed. It's like to harm children is just evil. It's just evil. It's laziness. It's being told what to do. I think you alluded to that earlier about basically if they don't go along with the program, they can be ostracized or banned from the industry. This is the stuff, you know, so basically if you won't conform, we punish you. And you cannot do that in the field of medicine or mental health or any of those types of fields. That has to be based on truth, trust and diagnosing and giving exactly what's going on with the individual and not guessing and let's try this and let's try that and, oh, I gave you too much. That's crazy.
Right. In 2013, there's something called the IMS Health Vector 1 National and Total Patient Tracker Database. And it indicated then, 7 years ago, that 249,669 children from 0 to 1 year old are on anti-anxiety drugs like Xanax, Ativan, and Klonopin. And 26,406 children, 0 to 1 year old, are on antidepressants such as Prozac, Zoloft, and Paxil. How can you take a 6-month-old baby, an infant, and put them on Prozac?
Well, you know, that's where I said there has to be some form of evilness behind this. And, you know, unfortunately, the people have to become aware to the point where they will do something about that. The government or civil rights groups have it. And we just need to take it in our own hands.
Exactly. We'll be right back. Are back. I'm sorry, I get very emotional when I think of putting a sweet little infant, a 6-month-old infant on Prozac. It just, I'm just horrified that people would, the doctors would even conceive of doing such a evil thing. It's absolutely evil.
Well, one of the things that we found that allows a lot of the children to get electric shocked on and specifically put on these drugs and stuff is the Medicaid system. And, you know, it's the federal and state funding that goes into our welfare system, that goes into our foster care, all of this type of stuff. And a lot of this is coming, that's who pays for it, that's where it comes from, and a lot of our children and babies and toddlers are being the victims of that system that is paying for this care. And, you know, it's we need to start addressing this whole thing because the programs that were put in place to help people are now becoming the trap. And we don't need it to go that way because to put a baby on those type of drugs, and I want to say that is the appropriate reaction for anybody hearing that babies and children are being abused. And no one should ever even give you an idea that you should have to apologize for weeping for children. You know, I do. Most of us do. I meet people who are the nicest people, and they come up to me at seminars and stuff and say, I'm on these drugs. And what was their crime? They were just big kids, or they had a menacing look, but they had the kindest heart. I had a kid in my group home that he was one of those kids. They were scared to death of him, you know. But there was nothing wrong with this kid. I took him and helped him get it together. He went to USC, played sports. He went to the NFL, all that because I cared and was willing to spend the time and look past the mask he had on and find out who he was. And the system of probation wanted him on drugs, and in a continuation school, I put him in a high school where he graduated, went to USC, played on national championship teams, and then went into the NFL. That's the type of thing we need to be doing with our children. Find the way to save them, not to control them and harm them.
I totally agree with you. And children are our future, and we should respect them, love them, treat them with kindness, not put them on on something that's going to destroy them. And this crazy friend of mine just sent me an email that I'll close with because it's really funny and we need some little bit of a lighthearted ending. He said, a friend asked me if I would like to go hunting with him. I said, okay, I'm game. And he shot me. I know that's ridiculous. But,
Deanna, if I could, go ahead.
Oh.
No, I was just going to say, if I could, because I know we're running out of time, I just want to let people know that they can contact me through Reverend Shaw, just put Rev, R-E-V, capital R-E-V, S-H-A-W, at CCHR.org, and they can contact me. That's my email. I'll email them back. We're looking for people who will email me and say, hey, I want my organization just put down with a letter as somebody that wants to support banning electroshock. You can contact us. We'll give you information. You can go to CCHR.org, and you can find out all kind of information on all of these topics. And for those that are in Los Angeles that might be able to hear you, we're located at 6616 Sunset Boulevard, Los Angeles, California, 90028. So you can contact me at any time. I will assist your audience. And I will even let you know if anybody that's heard your show come to our facility when we're up and running again. Everybody shut down just, you know, for this virus. But once we're up and running again in a couple of months, we most definitely would like your listeners to get involved in what we do.
Thank you so much, and my love and hugs to you for everything that you do. Thank you so very, very much. Take
care. You are welcome. Thank you for the platform. Okay, bye-bye.
All righty, bye-bye. Okay, talk to you next week. Have a good week. Be safe.